This is the Africa service of Vatican Radio.
Welcome to our half-hour daily program for Africa.
Stay tuned for our bulletin of church news, which will be followed by Panorama, and then our feature, Health and Healing. We shall close with a segment on the Synod on Synodality. I am John Baptist Tumusime. Pope Francis issued a message on X, the former Twitter, on Wednesday, saying there is a need for a new bond between the young and the elderly. The message comes just 4 days before the Catholic Church celebrates the World Day for Grandparents and the Elderly this coming Sunday, July 28th. The Pope prayed that grandparents and the elderly who have more experience in life may water the shoots of hope of those who are still growing. May we come to know the beauty of life and build a fraternal society, he concluded the message. The Bishop of the Catholic Diocese of Cachito in Angola, the Right Reverend Mauricio Camuto, has called upon the faithful and the general public in the country to respect public and private property. The bishop was speaking on Sunday in Cachito in reference to the new laws that have been passed by the Angolan parliament. The first law regards the sexual abuse of minors. It imposes a maximum of 8 years in jail for any person who is found guilty beyond reasonable doubt for sexually abusing a child. The second law regards vandalizing public goods and services. It imposes penalties ranging from 3 to 25 years in jail for offenders. Bishop Kamuto said the penalties imposed by the two laws are not proportionate. He wondered why a person who breaks a window of a public building such as the post office would go to jail for 25 years when a person who commits a more serious offense like sexually abusing a child and ruining the life of that child is jailed for only 8 years. He reminded members of the Angolan parliament that the purpose of laws is to maintain order, establish standards, protect liberties, and resolve disputes. He said the Catholic Church does not fold its arms or remain indifferent in the face of injustice and the violation of people's rights. Representatives from the Catholic, Anglican, Lutheran, and other Christian churches, as well as national councils of churches and interreligious councils, and representatives of Muslims from across Africa, concluded their meeting in Rwanda's capital Kigali at the weekend, and in their statement, they appealed to rich countries and international lending institutions to cancel the debts African countries owe them. After indicating that this year alone, all African countries will pay $90 billion in debt servicing, the religious leaders said many African countries are not able to pay their debts and are in a dilemma on how they will provide services to their citizens. A Catholic priest serving as a gift of faith in Niger, Father Augustine Anuchie, has called for a change of approach in the formation of future priests. He made the call last Friday at the 7th session of the ongoing synodal conversation organized by the Pan-African Catholic Theology and Pastoral Network in collaboration with the Conference of Major Superiors of Africa and Madagascar. He said communication between major seminarians and formators in Africa is difficult because of the underlying suspicion that the formators are more interested in the negative aspects of a seminarian's life than in helping him to grow in virtue. Father Anuchie noted that such approach does not allow seminarians to be themselves. Many hide who they are, and after ordination, they begin to show their true selves. Father Anuchie called upon Catholic bishops' conferences and religious houses in Africa to encourage open communication between seminarians and their formators. The government of the United States of America says it is hosting trade ministers from African countries in Washington, D.C. from this Wednesday, July 24th to 26th to discuss plans to extend the African Growth and Opportunity Act, AGOA, until 2041. AGOA is a U.S. cooperation act that provides eligible sub-Saharan African countries the privilege to export certain goods to the American market without paying taxes. In 2024, only 32 African countries are eligible to the AGOA benefits. You are tuned to the English Africa service of Vatican Radio.
African News Panorama.
Kenyan President William Ruto on Wednesday nominated four members of the main opposition party to a broad-based cabinet that he promised in response to nationwide protests. But activists criticized the new government as a corrupt bargain. The opposition members, including the PIC to lead the finance ministry, are allies of opposition leader Raila Odinga, whom Ruto defeated in the 2022 election. Dozens of people have been detained in the Ugandan capital, Kampala, after joining scattered anti-corruption protests in defiance of an official ban. Lawyers said those taken by the police following the march on the country's parliament on Tuesday were hurriedly brought before courts and remanded in custody. President Yoweri Museveni, who has ruled Uganda for almost four decades, had warned before the event that protesters were playing with fire. The march was organized on social media amid anger over long-running allegations of corruption involving several high-profile public officials. The protests were partly inspired by demonstrations last month in neighboring Kenya, which forced President William Ruto to drop planned tax rises. There are also fears in Nigeria that the youth may get inspired by the protests in Kenya and take to the streets in protest. The media on Tuesday quoted Nigeria's President Bola Tinubu as urging young people not to join nationwide cost of living protests planned for next week. He said such a move is the work of sinister people capitalizing on the country's economic woes. His warning comes ahead of protests planned for 1st August. Reports from Ethiopia say that rescue teams have so far retrieved the bodies of 229 people in two landslides in southern Ethiopia. Heavy rains in a remote mountainous area of the Gofa zone caused a landslide on Sunday. And as police officers, teachers and residents from nearby villages frantically continued with search and rescue operations on Monday, a second landslide occurred, burying them two under the mud. Southern Ethiopia is among the areas of the country that have been hit by particularly heavy rain and flooding in recent months. You are tuned to the Daily Africa Service of Vatican Radio.
And now, our feature, Health and Healing. The United Nations Office on Drugs and Crime issued a report recently warning that the legalization by some countries of formerly banned drugs has increased the consumption of those drugs and their popularity. There are more than 30 countries around the world that have authorized the use of drugs for recreational and other purposes. The reasons they give to justify their decision include enhancing their economies, reducing the number of addictions and death caused by illegal drug consumption, and that some drugs cure diseases and therefore needed by some sick people for use as medicine. The drugs in question are cannabis, also known as marijuana, crack, and cocaine. People who are opposed to the legalization of drugs point out the negative effects the drugs have on individuals, members of their families, and the community at large. These effects include dependence and addiction, higher public health and financial costs for society to treat addicts, gastrointestinal disorders such as constipation, ulcers, and stomach inflammation, increased risk of heart attack, increased blood pressure, headaches, loss of appetite, and mental health problems such as depression, anxiety, fear, lack of sleep, and loss of memory. Angela May is an official of the United Nations Office on Drugs and Crime. She explains more.
The report looks at the impact of legalization in the jurisdiction where this happened, but cannabis has been also legalized in different forms also in some countries. So what is clear is that the cannabis legalization has brought more harmful use of a substance. So there has been some increase on the percentage of young people and of adult population using drugs.
So when you talk about harmful use, would you mean that you're seeing the health impacts? You're seeing more people going to hospital or clinics with drug-related issues?
Yes, more hospitalization. And also some studies now are emerging showing also more mental health issues relating to attempted suicide or psychosis, this kind of mental health implications.
And so you are really seeing a causal link there. You're linking the legalization, the prevalence to these health impacts.
From a research perspective, what seems to emerge is that the cannabis legalization accelerated some of the trends that were there before on the use of cannabis.
The advocates of legalization often say that one of the benefits is that it will massively reduce the backlog of cases in the criminal justice system, because when you have strict laws, you have many people who are criminalized for just handling a small piece of cannabis or small quantity of drugs. But what you're saying is that there's not a strict correlation between legalization and the criminal justice system. It's very, very region specific.
International drug control is really this idea of balancing the use of the drugs for scientific and medical purposes, while avoiding that the drugs can actually undermine the health. So to ensure that the drugs are controlled in a way that they can protect the public health, because as we know, those the drugs that are controlled have very important health consequences when they are used particularly often.
Does the United Nations have a stated opinion on the use of recreational drugs? And what I mean by that is the UN saying that people shouldn't be using controlled substances at all, or is it more neutral on that stance? What is the opinion of the UN?
The opinion of the UN is based on the international conventions, and that is, again, the objective and always the ultimate goal also of the UN is to protect the health of the citizens, of the people. So recreational use means no medical use of certain substances. And so no medical use means using the substances in a way that can be harmful. And it's like any drug when we feel sick, we go to the doctor and because we want to take a prescription, we want to take pharmaceuticals to benefit of our health. And so, and that's why we have a medical use. So a doctor that can tell us this is good for you and this is bad for you. So recreational use in a way and non-medical use is, if you want, a dangerous use of drugs. But and science is very today clear that if you want the non-medical use even of cannabis, cocaine, heroin, all of those, if you want, traditional drugs are harmful. You see, if you have a scan of the brain, particularly of young people that frequently use cannabis, for example, you see clearly the difference and the impact. And that is particularly important to think for the young people, because it's when they are developing the brain. We know now that the brain develops until 25. And so everything that is taken, being cannabis, also the other substance, clearly damage this development process. And it's something that a person will have for the rest of his or her life.
There are huge implications for human rights in drug production industry, if you will.
Definitely. Helping countries to maintain this international regulation with the objective, again, to protect the health and at the same time ensuring that the control drugs are available when they are needed, so that morphine is available to control pain, etc. In this context, clearly within the UN is to use this thinking about protecting the human rights of all involved. And so those that require for medical use, so to make sure that they have the right and they can actually access the drugs that they need. On the other side, the people who use drugs, that the way how the state protect their health is, you know, in relation to providing services, to providing health services in a way that their privacy, that their dignity, that they are not stigmatized, that they are not discriminated because they are using drugs.
Angela May, an official of the United Nations Office on Drugs and Crime, speaking there from Vienna in Austria to Con Lennon of the United Nations News. And that was Health and Healing for this week.
The Synod on Synodality, the Church on a three-year journey of discernment, listening, dialogue, participation and mission.
I've got a word to speak with somebody. I share with you because you should know that synodality shapes the church.
Hello and welcome to our program on the Synod on Synodality in Africa. This edition is brought to you by Sister Patsimo Veronica Ramukwebana. The journey of this Synod on Synodality is a call to renewal and a celebration of working together on the same path, working together to encourage and reflect on how the Church can live more fully in communion, to promote full participation in the life of the Church, and to renew its missionary zeal. From the beginning, synodality has been a central part of who we are through the small Christian communities, as reflected by Father Gilambele Simbulambo of the Society of the Missionaries of Africa.
I am Father Gilambele Simbulambo. I'm a member of the Society of Missionaries of Africa, which is the Society of Apostolic Life. I am from the eastern part of the Democratic Republic of Congo. After my formation in Congo, then Zambia and Kenya, and after my ordination in 2013, I worked in Niger for 3 years, then in Togo for 7 years, before I came to Rome for further studies in canonical studies at Gregorian University.
The spirit of Synod on Synodality has been introduced in Africa and is spreading. What is your assessment on the Synod on Synodality now that we are almost halfway through? Before we move on to the second phase of discussion, which will take place this October.
Let's first say that of all that, the desire to involve everyone in the mission of the Church is an old one in Africa. Remember with the impetus of Vatican II, the small Christian community started to blossom in Africa. The aim was to bring the good news in all the spheres of our lives with the help of the involvement of the lay faithful. From Central Africa, the movement of the small Christian community spread to Eastern Africa, then to Southern and Western Africa. So the introduction of constitutional different councils in the parishes continued that desire to make room for the commitment of all. Especially the pastoral council played a big role. So the Synod on Synodality had found a fertile soil on which it could sprout. More and more, the clergy and the laity work together for the common good of the parishes and the local church at large. The Synod on Synodality had given people the confirmation that what they were doing was exactly what they should do. This spirit of cooperation, dialogue, and commitment of all is bit by bit infusing all the lay associations in our parishes. So we can say on that point that the spirit of synodality is really taking root in Africa, and it did not just start with this synod. This synod just woke it up in a bigger way. But we should also not forget that new ideas always make people feel threatened. so, because new ideas will break our routine and this can create fear. So despite all this good spirit of synodality, which we found blowing in Africa, I saw some resistance also. Some people thought that working together means flattening our different roles in the community, so that a priest and the lay will be the same. Others believed that synodality was a kind of trade union of the lay against the monarchy of the clergy. Others again feel like synodality is a way of bringing some strange belief in the church. So I just hope that the last phase of this synod, which will be actually after this last session, and that is the phase of implementation, will really be given all the importance it deserves, so that the spirit of synodality may really take root and change our way of doing and our way of being.
What are some of your experiences and your participation in the synodal journey in Togo?
Yeah, before even the idea of synod was launched, in Togo, in our parish, Our Lady of Africa, that is in the diocese of Atakpamé, it's in the southern suburb of the town of Atakpamé, my appointment was really a synodal appointment. In fact, our bishop, using the canon 517 of the Code of the Canon Law, appointed the three of us in the parish, were the three priests in the community. He appointed all of us parish priests in Solidum. That means the pastoral care of the parish was given to all of us. So in the community, we had meetings for planning together the pastoral activities. Out of the three, there was one moderator who could represent the parish to the bishop. And that helped us also on the level of the parish activity to have a regular pastoral council meeting, which had helped us to discern together the pastor of the parish and also how to implement it. I may say also that of all the synods, this one, the Synod on Synodality, is the one which captivated me a lot. And it does so because deep within me, I really felt very painfully the consequences of the lack of dialogue within the church. This makes us move in different directions, and it has very horrible consequences for the pastor. I felt like some in the church do too much, while others are almost idle. I felt the same as far as the rights and duties are concerned. Some people, their rights are so stressed, while for others, their duties are repeated again and again. For me, this could not favor any commitment of all the people together in the parish. So the synod, for me, came as a vindication of my deep questioning, but also at the same time as an answer to it. For that reason, I got involved in the whole process of synod with a lot of enthusiasm. On a personal level, I tried my best to be formed and also to be informed about synodality. I read all the documents about synodality coming from Vatican. I also went back to all the documents of the Vatican II, which spoke of collegiality, of participation and mission together, and so on and so forth. I also participated in many webinars organized by the African Synodality Initiative. Yesterday, there was one of that, which focused on the role of the lay associations in the church. I also followed some formation, which were organized by the Boston College, the School of Theology and Ministry. There were three sets of formation on history, theology, and practice of synodality, then on the common discernment and decision-making of a synodal church, and on towards a constitutively synodal church. So that was on my personal level.
Well, this has been enriching, Father. Can you share your approach of the synod on the parish level? How has been the experience?
In our parish, I directed the consultation of all the groups in our parish with the help of some lay people. And personally, I coordinated the groups of the youth and of the children. There were two young girls who really astounded me. They were one of 8, the other one 11. One was a reader in the church. She could read the word of God during the liturgy. She was so small, she could not even reach the ambo. So we had to put a stool for her. And another one was a catechist. One was 11 years. So when I spoke to them about synodality, they spoke very well about their commitment, and they were very sure how they are contributing to the mission of the church. Really, this astounded me and left me wondering, how can synodality help us consider children as agents of mission and not just like beneficiaries of the pastoral care of the church. So that was really the experience I kept from that consultation.
Do you have something to say about the involvement of the deanery level of the diocese?
After that consultation on the parish level, my moderator, Father Callistus, took over, and then they had to make a summary on the deanery level. And I was pleased to see that the work of our parish was taken as the backbone for the summary of the deanery. Then after this summary on the deanery level, there was one day where we called all of us to the diocesan level, where priests and lay people and some representatives of churches and the other religions were invited. By other religions, I mean Islam and traditional religions. It was also a very nice moment to see in all these people the desire to journey together. So in brief, that's what I would say about my experience and my involvement about the synodal process in Togo.
As Christians, we are invited to remain prayerful, docile, respectful, recognizing the gifts of others and sharing them generously. We are all wanted and equal on this journey, so everyone has something to contribute. As a blessing to the Church, the ripple effects of synodality will permeate every dimension of the Church's life. You have been listening to Father Gilambele Zimbulambo of the Society of the Missionaries of Africa, commonly known as the White Fathers. Until we meet again next week on Wednesday at the same time. And I am Sister Patsimo Veronica Ramukwebana. You are tuned to English Africa Service of Vatican Radio.
I've got a word to speak with somebody. I share with you because you should know that synodality shapes the church.
You have been listening to the English Africa Service of Vatican Radio, and I am Johnny Baptist Tomosime. In your next program at the same time tomorrow, you can hear our feature, Culture and Society. Praised be Jesus Christ. Laudetur Jesus Christus.